Okay, so we'll start proceedings for the next hour with inviting our guests to tell us a little bit about themselves and why people might vote for them, or to use the minute or so, whichever way they choose. We'll start in a clockwise fashion again, because people sit down randomly. And Sinn Féin Councillor Jack Moore, you're looking, of course, to be returned to the council.
Yeah, thank you, Greg.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'll be asking the people of South Annishan to vote for me based on my record as a councillor over the last 8 years. I'm proud of the work that I've done. I feel that I've worked extremely hard for the people I represent and a community that I'm very, very proud of. I led out on campaigns like that for Swan Park, the successful campaign which secured well over €1 million to restore Swan Park. I've been outspoken on issues like Buncrana Leisure Centre, the tourism product of Greene na Bhaile, the three-school campus, the need for investment in water infrastructure in South Annishan, and the many issues that have arisen from the floods of August 2017. But I would say, and I think it's important that it's been said, I suppose, in many of these debates, that all politics is local. And while that might be true, I don't think you can separate the local and national in any election. I think the local and European elections can be seen as a midterm election in which people can voice their opposition to the current government and the gross misuse of public finances, particularly in recent times. And I would ask people to vote for the only organised, cohesive and large party bloc that is opposed to this government, and that's a vote for Sinn Féin.
OK, Councillor Jack Moore, thank you very much. Joe Murphy of Aintu, good morning to you, Joe. Thanks for calling in.
Morning, Greg. My name's Joe Murphy. I'm here representing Aintu, and Aintu is a new political party. We are a 32-county, all-Ireland Republican party dedicated to protecting life, Irish unification and economic justice. I've been out in the doors, and of course the mic is that's the big one. That's coming up on most doors. Other issues, eye care, housing adaptation, lone parents, which I think are local heroes. Swans Park, Furses Lane, mental health. One of the things I'm trying to bring back is Buncrana Town Council. I think it's essential that Buncrana Town Council brought back for Buncrana. Make Buncrana Muff, Newton, Donegal disabled friendly. I'm getting that in a lot of doors, that disabled people can't have proper access to their own town and their local amenities like Buncrana Cinema. That's one issue.
Okay. Mark McKinney, apologies, your name wasn't on the list I was reading from earlier on, so I'm genuinely sorry about that. But you're standing as an independent, Mark. Why? Good morning to you, and why do you believe people should use their important vote for you?
Well, my name's Mark McKinney. I'm originally from Muskehing and Muff, now living in Quigley's Point. And I'd call myself a community activist because I've been working in the community for the past few years. I was right at the front of the fight against water meters installation and the boycott of Irish water, which is all far from over. I was part of the campaign for decent ambulance service for Annishan, which hopefully we're getting. I've helped people with housing issues, social welfare issues, people who were hit with a flood, people with in a bad place with their mental health, all this off my own back. It was these people that actually asked me to run. They wanted a voice for them, the ordinary people. I'll be the first to say that I have a lot to learn, but I can take this on as a full-time job because of no other commitments at this minute. And I think it's time we got ordinary people on the council, people that can relate to people that they're standing for, and get rid of all the party politics, all the arguing and who got what. It should be all about the people.
Okay, thank you very much for that, Mark. Of course, we're going to hear much more from you over the course of the hour. Fianna Fáil's Councillor Paul Canning, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Firstly, I'd like to thank yourself, Greg, and Highland Radio for inviting us here on today for this debate and say hello to all of our listeners. The reason why a person should vote for me is I've been a sitting councillor for a number of years. I have a proven track record on looking after my area in South Annishan. I have a full understanding of the workings of Donegal County Council. Also, everything that we do at council level requires proper planning, our towns, our infrastructure, our rural dwellings and the protection of our landscape. As you heard yesterday, we have a large number of homes that are affected by mica that will need proper knowledge-based advice on reconstruction of their homes and help with any outstanding planning issues. The takeover of our housing estates is also a major issue. Residents within these estates need the proper advice, the proper information, site layout maps, drawings and professional help to get their estate taken over by this council. All of the aforementioned items are well within my qualified remit, along with a knowledge-based experience to deal confidently, diligently around any decision-making table if I am elected on May the 24th, and I will be on top of the ballot paper.
OK, thank you very much for that. Independent Sinead Stewart, good morning, Sinead.
Morning, Greg. Morning, everybody. My name is Sinead Stewart. I'm a native South Inishowen woman. I'm the only independent woman running in the South Inishowen area. I am endorsed by Thomas Pringle, and I'm very honoured by that. I'm also honoured to have the endorsement of Luke McFlanagan. I'm a working single mother, and I've been a community and political activist since I was in my 20s. That was when I was living in the north, when I became heavily involved with cross-community voluntary work there. I'm active in my trade union, but more than that, I'm passionate about Inishowen. I'm passionate about Inishowen people. And if I'm honoured enough to be elected, I would be strongly lobbying for social and affordable housing, creating conditions for decent, sustainable jobs. Basically, a vote, and as well as that, the thing that I'm hearing on the doors a lot is the taking over the housing estates as well. A number one vote for Sinead Stewart is a vote for a strong, fresh voice who'll battle for the people of South Inishowen in a strong, capable way.
Okay, thank you, Sinead. And lastly but not least, of course, Councillor Mickey Doherty of Fine Gael. Thank you for coming, Mickey.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to all the listeners out there. I would ask you to vote for me because of my experience in the council in the 6 years that I've done there. I wish that had been more, but unfortunately it didn't work out that way. A vote for me would get a strong community-based candidate with a proven political record. I am an experienced councillor working for the needs of the Inishowen people, and I have positive policies addressing the needs of each local area. You can trust me, I'm born in the area, I live in the area, and I know the local people. I was brought up in Inishowen from I was born. I was a few years out of it, but gladly I came back. And I get great pleasure in representing the people of Inishowen and the different issues throughout Inishowen. The area I'm covering now, South Inishowen, a lot of it, three quarters of it, is new to me because I co-opted the seat from John Ryan, and it's relatively new to me. So there's issues that I'm dealing with and I've highlighted, and which we'll go into later, such as the leisure centre, the three school campus, the upgrading of the sewage treatment plant in Buncrana, and the big one would be more carers needed in Inishowen.
As you say, we'll get through a lot of these issues as we wear on. Jack Murray, two of the things you mentioned in your preamble there, your statement was flooding and swimming pool for Buncrana. There's still many people who are out of their homes because of flooding. I'm not sure any flood mitigation work has taken place. And, you know, we can say what we like, but we're no closer to a swimming pool in Buncrana. And those are the two things you highlighted as to why people should vote for you.
Yeah, as I say, this has been a very, very frustrating process on both issues. I've worked very hard within the council to progress both issues. The flooding issue was always going to be a very, very difficult battle. Burnfoot was originally omitted from the OPW's plan of flood defences, so we kind of started on the back foot on that.
But all the money's been allocated, there's millions been allocated, why has it not been spent? What councillors are doing to put pressure on to force that money to be spent?
Yeah, and I suppose it could be easy to blame certain councillors for that, but there's been no lack of will, no lack of work and no lack of pushing in the county council to get this progressed as quickly as possible. I regularly meet with the residents of Burnfoot. I've been contacting with issues as recently as this morning. So they'd be well aware of the work that I've been doing on that issue. I'm from the village of Burnfoot, so I would take it quite personally that I want that issue resolved. I don't want the village that I grew up in to
what
be in jeopardy.
What do you believe the hold-up is?
It's been a frustrating. There's a lot of bureaucratic hoops that go through. You've designed process to be done. You've 1.5 million to spend, so it's not something that you can do quickly. People might presume that just stick up a wall and that'll block the flood. It can take quite a bit more than that. An executive engineer was only appointed in the last month. Consultants will be appointed in the summer. So it is, and people might not be aware, but councillors have no role And in a way, I think it's right that they don't have a role in the recruitment process within the council. But that does have its own problems and that does have its own frustrations.
Councillor Canning, you're sitting councillor as well. I mean, you know, has anything been done to mitigate against any flood risk going forward? I mean, people listening to this, they're sick of talk. They want action. What's the holdup? Are you doing enough to make sure, you know, homes and businesses are protected as they should be? The money's been allocated.
Yeah, it's frustrating for the people of Bournemouth and a lot of other towns that have had flooding since the serious flood last year. Situation with it is, it's like all procurement, the first thing you have to do is secure the money. We have secured the money. Now the process is getting a person to do the work. And it's long drawn out, the actual employing of staff. Now we have a staff member that worked on the water, the flooding down in the Shannon. So hopefully he has the qualification and he's the right man for the job. But to actually mitigate against the flooding in an area like Bournemouth because of a floodplain...
Or even more broadly speaking.
Well, even more broadly, anywhere that is flooded is obviously going to be a floodplain. So to mitigate against that without creating a problem elsewhere can be very difficult.
Mark, you were with in another area, weren't you, where there was frustration that nothing has been done to try and protect homes. So it's not. I know Bournemouth's incredibly important, but it's not just there. There are other people who are living in fear of the next deluge.
Yeah, a couple in Quigley's Point, John and Nina Brennan. Their house.
Do you accept what these two councillors are saying about as much as being done is being done?
Well, it's 19 months now. There needs to be serious pressure put on it. And it's easy to sit back and say, you have to do, there's people to get the jobs and all the rest, but it has to be put to the forefront. Like John and Mina, they were contacting councillors for months and months and getting nothing back. That's when they came on board then and we organised a protest. Every sitting councillor was invited. Not one of them turned up. So straight away, that shows me that they even cared.
You weren't invited, Jack?
No, I wasn't aware of it.
Well, sure, Terry Crossan was there, Jack. So, and he gave apologies for poor Ed McLaughlin.
Well, Terry might have been invited. I wasn't.
You were invited because I invited you.
Yeah. Right, when?
On Facebook. It was a thing set up. The page for it.
That's not a direct invite. It's quite possible that he doesn't see your wall. But I take your point. Your point stands, and Jack, you're saying you weren't invited.
I say the meeting in Bournemouth, we were all invited. We were all called. Every candidate turned up.
I was told that the public reps had to be encouraged to speak at that meeting, that they weren't very forthcoming in commentary.
I had no problem speaking at that meeting.
What's your view on this stuff, Joe Murphy?
Well, I think it's down to the lack of communication. That's what I got from the people up there, was communication. They don't know what's happening on a day-to-day basis, and the councillors would need to kind of fill them in on a weekly basis, if not, you know, on a bit more. Another thing is, you know, when these flooding, and we all know what's going to happen. We all know what's going to happen all over in the Shone and the wider Donegal. We need to start taking precautions countrywide. You know, this is all down to the climate and stuff, like, you know. So this is not a one-off thing. This is going to happen again and again and again.
Sinead or Mickey, do you just want to come in on that one as well, or before?
Mm-hmm. Like, Sinead? Well, being from Bournemouth as well, I'm constantly in contact with the people in Bournemouth. This morning they were sending me through what you were talking about earlier, you know, the padlocks on the door and things like that. And they want it highlighted and they want communication. They definitely need some action. And I don't think that the Donegal County Council Board itself is doing enough.
The executive. Councillor Mickey Doherty, finally.
Certainly. On the Bournemouth one, I have been pushing hard on it, and I've had several meetings with John McLaughlin regarding it, and sometimes not very pleasant meetings, because I felt from my own experience on this nature of work from years back in Scotland and other places, I felt that there was a lot of time being wasted on it, and I was actually accused of the council not having the money. Okay, the money may not be in the council account, but it's ring-fenced by the department. But on that, the biggest issue that I could see with it, and the biggest problem is finding the suitable engineers who had the experience in flood protection and floodplain areas. With regards to the one in Quigley's Point, it's one that I've been working with for the past over a year. And I'm working very closely and getting it very near to a resolution. And Mark can verify, you saw a letter that only recently they got back from OPW where they made it very clear that it's a council issue now, and the council can claim the cost of repairing it, and the council can be responsible for 90% of the cost, which I would hope that'll happen.
Okay.
And I have a meeting with the roads engineer actually next week on that.
I'm going to stay with you, Councillor Doherty, because we have to address this. I'm not trying to paint you a corner. It's not a cheap shot, but you were on with me last week or the week before. You said, on as it relates to Meeker address, if it's above 5%, you're pulling out of Fine Gael. Now, I know there's no appetite from the likes of the Meeker Action Group for you to do so, but I must ask you, it's 10%, it's double your red line. Are you still a member of Fine Gael, and will you continue to be so?
Well, for starters, Greg, I didn't say I was pulling out of Fine Gael. I said I may not contest my seat.
No, that's even worse, okay. But yeah, you are, because you're here.
Yes, I am. Because, I'll be honest with you, I was serious about that. But I went and took a holiday, took a break. I went over to see my daughter in Spain and thought about it and decided that I just wasn't going. That was it, because it's not about getting your way. But I wasn't even in negotiating terms. And I came back from Spain on the Thursday, and on the Friday before the closing date for registering, Joe McHugh rang me at 11:30 that night and asked me to reconsider. And I said, well, Joe, I've sort of my mind made up. And I'd spoken with the leaders of the Meeker Group, and they had advised me, it was very silly of me, to step away from it, because they needed me in there, because I had a lot of work done on it, a lot of communication with head of department, and we're making progress.
Okay, so you've changed your mind.
I've changed my mind. Okay. And basically, okay, on that, and I know it's 10% now, and I mean, all right, it's not what I was hoping for, but at that stage it was 15% were being offered, and at least we're halfway.
Okay. You know. Does anyone believe that around the table that Councillor Mickey Doherty should follow up in his... You do?
Mickey, I think it makes your word...
This is Joe Murphy of Aintu.
Your word doesn't stand for nothing. The people of Donegal need councillors and nailers. Their word, they can rely on their word. Your word now stands for nothing, as far as I'm concerned. The people in the Mica and the Mica group, what they're getting is 10%. People I'm speaking to cannot afford this 10%. Where are they going to get it? They can't listen to you because your promises are empty, absolutely empty. But as far as I'm concerned, we can expect nothing less than that from Fine Gael. This Mica thing, you don't realise how big it is actually going to be. When the amount of houses come out at the end of this, there is thousands and thousands of houses involved. There is, what about the you know, you've got people built extensions, conservatories, the list goes on, it's endless. Will this money be coming on a regular basis? 20 million? 2 million of that has to be paid by the people. So all the government is offering here is 18 million.
Do you want to briefly respond to that, Councillor?
Yes,
Doherty?
Certainly will. With regards to Mica, Joe, there's nobody who has more experience in it than myself, because I've actually done repairs on it already and I know the cost of it.
Well, those people as well that have done repairs are not getting no money either.
Exactly.
This scheme is...
I know that.
Okay, Jack Moore, do you want to come in on that?
No.
Sorry, were you not finished, Mickey?
No,
beg your pardon,
no.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Joe. Joe, I intend to see this through if I'm re-elected. And whatever...
It's your word,
Joe,
I didn't interrupt you, Joe, please. Joe, I understand what you're saying, and I do understand the frustration. There's a nephew and niece of my own who are seriously and serious bad... a bad situation with the Mica. One house has to come down, I know that. And I actually met with them last week as well and discussed the 10%. And all right, there's nobody happy with it. And with regards to the funding of it for those who can't, I would hope to lobby the council. The council, for years and years, give out mortgages and loans.
Mm.
And I would like to see that money utilised now again and to just, help such people.
And Mickey, just before we get let everybody else in on the more broader topic, unless you want to talk about you, but that's I don't imagine so. But people not getting paid if they've spent money, do you think that needs to be looked at? I mean, one person contacted us today, 40 grand in the hole. That's fixed the outside of the building. The inside of the building's starting to go to pot now. Is that collateral damage, or do you believe that the... as many people that can be looked after will be looked after, and that if some people are left behind, then they're left behind.
I don't like the expression of being left behind. I don't want to see
well,
anybody left
behind.
Yes, I understand. I totally understand. Totally understand how they feel. But I do feel, and it's something that I did discuss months and months and months ago with the Micro Group. We'll try and get this over the line first, and then we'll try and lobby for those who...
So it's not over, maybe. Jack Murray, sorry, and we'll go around clockwise then from there.
No, well, it was kind of expected. I think it was nonetheless very, very disappointing that they came out with the 10%. I think it cemented, certainly in my view, the notion that...
Just talk about politics and honesty. I mean, you and the Council of Albert Doherty knew it was 10%. You knew it was not going to be 100%. Was it disingenuous releasing press releases the day before the announcement saying, unless it's 100%, it's no good, even though you knew it was not going to be 100%?
I didn't.
Well, your party did.
I don't know. I can't speak for
Albert. All right, we'll carry on with your point then.
No, but I do think it was extremely disappointing that the 10% was announced when... And I was saying it's cemented in my mind the view within government that Donegal is treated differently consistently from the rest of the state, and particularly from that of Dublin. I mean, look at the pyrite scheme, including the 32 million that's been ring-fenced this year for pyrite. That's a total of 125.8 million euro for the people of Dublin and North Leinster. The average spend per house is 70,000 euro, and the homeowners in Dublin and North Leinster don't have to pay a penny. If somebody in Donegal now wants to spend 70,000 euro on their house, or needs that spent on their house, they'll have to spend 7,000 euro. And when you take that in, I suppose, in the context that Donegal has the average person in Donegal has the lowest disposable income of any county in the state, while Dublin has the highest disposable income of any of the state. So for that notion to go through government, to think we'll lump 10% on the people of Donegal, we don't need to do that to the people of Dublin. Mm. I think it just is outrageous.
But given the reaction from the Micro Action Group, given the fact that Micro Action Donegal have cancelled their meeting or postponed the meeting for the end of the month, do Sinn Féin accept the 90-10 split? Yes or no?
No, I personally don't. No, I can understand that there's thousands of people affected by MICA, so I can understand that some of them are in a very desperate position and they'll take the 90%.
So if in government that your party would revisit this, and if it's possible, you would close that gap between...
Yeah,
you would? That's
absolutely. And very early on, we made a commitment. Sorry, but I just make this point.
Please.
Very early on, we made a commitment that we would fully support a full redress scheme, just like the pyrite scheme. So our commitment
is
there. But I don't accept now, and it's been said that you'd have to go through legislation to bring in a 100% scheme like pyrite, and it would take years and it would delay the scheme. I don't accept that, because we've seen legislation rush through the door. Like, we've seen legislation that cost the state billions of euro rush through the door in a matter of days. So I don't accept that. I think that's misleading by the government to say that.
I'm not saying you finished on this one, Joe, but you've had a word in it already, so I'll skip, if you don't mind, to independent Mark McKinney. Mark, thanks for waiting there.
No bother, Greg. 100% it should have been. Actually, it should have been more, because the people was out money through rent, 100%
whatever. 100% plus compensation.
Plus compensation. Yeah. Nobody's mentioned that. I was listening on yesterday, and somebody mentioned about the company that supplied the bricks, and I think it was Bernard McGuinness turned around and says they're not working.
We're not going down too far down that road, but they aren't in existence any longer in the form that they were at that time.
Right. Well, that's, to me, that's just a cheap way out of it. Like, and I was talking to a few people that actually have done the work, and with one person in particular, I think he spent 30,000 on it. Like, he's not going to get nothing now.
Mm.
And for the government to bring this out just before the election, I think it's too little, too late. They know they're in a bad place with a vote, and I think this was just to bring us out now, and maybe it might save some of it.
All right, too little, too late. Do you agree, Paul Canning or Fianna Fáil, or what's your own view?
The situation with it now, Mickey was saying last week or the week before, like, about the 5%. The 5% I would have, would have been more acceptable than where we are with the 10%. But situation with it, we can all say the 100% or all of that. But at the end of the day, the group that has been working with it, and to be fair to them, they put in a serious shift. and they're in
just,
a situation.
Can I just say, for clarity, though, they don't have, they at least 5,000 are affected by this. They've got 1,200 people signed up to them, so they represent a cohort, but they're not representative necessarily of everybody affected by.
Yeah, that's understandable. Yeah, I totally agree with you there. Situation with it is, we can all shout for the 100%. We can all shout for compensation, but the government, the way the governments work is it's all down to funding mechanism. And you could say, well, right then, let's go back and let's readdress it. Let's go back to the drawing board. 5 years from now, them houses are getting into worse state. There is nothing going to happen immediately. We are in a situation now where there's something is happening now, and it's very difficult for the people. I know it's very difficult for the people for the 10%, like, but we need to sort of start from could here it, on, I mean, start focusing on the 90%.
Could any of you put your hand on 20 grand now if you had to?
Not a chance.
Just a straw poll, so the majority of us couldn't get 20 grand together, as an example. Were you finished, Paul Sinead? You were finished. Okay, Sinead, go ahead.
I think it should have been 100%, and it definitely, absolutely should have been 100%. There should be no difference in people of Donegal and the people of Dublin and North Leinster. But more than that, what I've been hearing and people contacting me is that they're now nervous. People are nervous that it's going to be the same outfit supplying the blocks now for this scheme, because Donegal County Council has a contract with the same, more or less.
It's not the same company, it's a change company,
but it's the same outfit. But that's what they're nervous about now. And I think it's, you know, that needs to be addressed. And those questions need to be asked for the people that's affected, because at the end of the day, we're all here sitting around the table. I actually have my house, but it's a council house, so the council will they'll foot the bill. But the people who are homeowners, we all need to be taking the lead from them and see what's acceptable to them and ask these questions on their behalf, because that's what they're nervous about.
Councillor Doherty, just if we can go around one more. I know Joe wants to come in, but before we move on to another topic, would you be of the mindset, or if you received any sort of information, I seem to be being told this, but in a roundabout way, that when it comes down to it, if people can't get the 10% together, then there'll be some sort of a scheme or some sort of a system put in place through the County Council to ensure that just because someone doesn't have 10% that they won't get the 90%. Is that the sense that you're getting, and is that what sort of softened your cough as it relates to the 5% red line?
That is exactly what I was talked to our Minister McHugh on last night, and although there isn't anything in place, it's hoped that there will be.
Okay.
And that's why I referred to Donegal County Council being in a position to let it be alone, let it be whatever. But put it this way, I would certainly hope, and like Joe says, I certainly hope, and I'm 100% for it, that there certainly will be nobody left behind.
All right, Joe wanted to come back in there. Joe Murphy, if anything.
Yeah, well, there is going to be people left behind. This is a government scheme, and there is going to be people left behind. I spoke to a young lady the other night, and if she wanted to get 100 quid tomorrow morning, she couldn't get it. Her house is falling apart, you know. There's a number of questions there that needs to be answered from the government, and very, very quick. Well, how many homes are affected? We haven't got an absolute clue. The council houses have not been included in this. Government buildings, any new government buildings. This goes back to 1980, you know. What about the families that have already done the work? Are they going to be compensated? We need them questions answered. There's, as far as the company that made the blocks, the blocks now I've heard are of a good standard, you know. So we need answers. We need loads of answers.
But that's the point.
You heard from Joe there. He's got the assurances. I'm sure that there are checks and balances. If we've learned anything in place now, what would satisfy those concerns?
That would be something that would need to be down to the residents, Greg.
Right, Jack Morey, Councillor Jack Morey.
It's just that there's another question I think that needs to be addressed to the government, and Sinead raised about the council houses. If the council have to foot the 10% for council houses that are necessary, like, will that reduce the council's capital spend and their ability to build future social housing? So it could have a knock-on effect like that. And I think in the grand scheme of things, when you look at the likes of the National Children's Hospital, the broadband plan, and the bottomless pit of money that the government seem to have found to pour in these vanity projects, what they've become now, they're penny-pinching when it comes to Donegal with a very, very serious issue.
Councillor Canning, Jack May's raised an important point there. Who will come up with the 10% from a council perspective? In other words, You know, how much is going to come out of the coffers of the council? And if money's going to have to come out of what the council is available to spend for it, it's not forthcoming from central government, well, then we could see services in other areas. I mean, we're in speculation territory because we don't have any facts, but we could see spending in other areas in Donegal being reduced as the council foots or find some mechanism to support this this pirate scheme. It'd be nice if we had that, to have this meeker address scheme.
The situation with it'll be value for the money rather than the actual money, and so to speak. Whenever you, if you're doing anything to your house or whatever, and you get the redress scheme of 200,000 or whatever, the amount of money that goes towards different fees that the council can waiver will save on that. And that will work up, and it'll work close to 5 or 10%.
A little bit like we see in sort of match funding schemes.
Correct.
A bit of labour can be taken into consideration or whatever. In other words, there are ways to sort of take down that 10%. Yeah. That's what I suspect might happen.
The budget, all of the budgets next, the government's next budget, and the council's budget needs to be, and the micro group are well aware of it.
But you're confident in this scheme, finally, before I go to Paul, you're confident, not Paul, sorry, but Mark, you're confident this scheme is a legitimate, well-intentioned scheme, and you don't believe this is trying to purchase an election?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, Mark McKinney, what do you think, finally?
Finally, what I've been saying earlier, I think it's totally to do with election. It just comes out, finally getting the government know.
That's a war chest, really, do you think? You don't think it's legitimate?
They're playing with people's lives, like. At the end of the day, it's gone on for, 7-8 years now, and all of a sudden, right, we're going to get these 90%. Most of the people, Joe said it there, they couldn't get £100. They haven't got it. Like. And to say that that's their mental health, their families are getting destroyed over this, people's marriages getting broke up over it, 10%, it's definitely, it's brutal. Like.
Yeah, that's the voice of... go ahead, Joe. And Shay wants to come back in briefly on
any
this as
work
well.
That's
it's
done
a big issue, so we can...
It is. Any work that's done in these houses, the people that has the work done when the work is completed and finished, they need to get a certificate to say that their house is mica-free because of the resale value of their houses. And the estate agents are still selling houses with mica. You know, this whole thing is just... I think we are only seeing the... I think we're only putting a flag on top of the iceberg.
I'll be contacted by 5 people who have only found out after the fact that they were trying
to
be sold.
Thousands who don't know yet.
And that's only... I don't know that many
There's
people.
Thousands out there who don't know.
Sinead?
Yeah, that was kind of the point that I was going to make. I mean, will there be assurances that the people who own these homes now will be able to get insured and will be able to go on and resell these homes if they need to? But in terms of the announcement and the timing of the announcement... It's electioneering and it's primitive, guys.
Jack Murray.
Just this year alone, there's 32 million ring fence for pyrite and 20 million for mica. And there's more people affected by mica than there is by pyrite. And I just think that needs to be asked, why was the pyrite redress scheme beefed up more than mica this year?
In fairness to you, Mickey Doherty, as a government councillor, I suppose, I mean, I'll ask you the same question, and I suspect I know your answer. Is this a war chest, really, a Fine Gael war chest? Is this really just a nice, timely announcement to win over voters in the local and European elections in this area?
No, it's not, because I know the depth that I've been working to on it, and it was this was going on long before there was any word of the election.
Mm.
And the other thing is, the government only did agree to fund it in October of last year. And okay... As far as I'm concerned, they were dragging their heels on it, big time. I expected this before Christmas, this announcement before Christmas. I expected it early February, and I've been expecting it ever since. But I'm not defending the government on this either. But the total payout on the pyrite scheme so far has been 70 million, you know, and. That's there's still work being done on
so
that.
So you believe it's a legitimate, well-intentioned, long-term commitment to this issue? That's your opinion.
And I'm sorry, Greg.
Greg, go ahead.
I certainly hope there'll be 37 councillors in Lifford, whoever they are, and after the 24th of this month, and I would hope that they'll continue to lobby and keep pressure on the government, whoever's in government.
Okay.
To ensure that each and every individual is seen.
Loads more to come, but we'll take a quick break. Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. 11 candidates seeking 5 seats, Buncrana South in Ashone. It's just a random question, I suppose. There's no point getting an answer to it. We'll be pretty brief, I suppose. We'll start with you, Mickey Doherty. Who do you want your 2 or 3 to go to, if you're lucky enough to get the one?
Well, I obviously want me to go to Michelle McKenna.
Yeah.
She's my running mate.
Any preference on a third?
A third I'd like to see going to Paul Canning.
There you go, Sinead Stewart.
That's a good question. I suppose it would be, I don't know, there's a few people that would be fairly in line with my own policies, but like the likes of Jack. But yeah, that would
and
be.
And Paul Canning, you have to, oh, Mickey won that.
Yeah, I see that. He's only given me a third, so I'm all right. No, I would, my running mate, Rena Donaghy, okay, working hard in a Buncrana, so I'd like her to get the number 2, and I'll give me, he'll do the number 3.
All right, so Mark McKinney, have you considered that, or are you just focusing on number 1s at
well,
this point?
Well, I'm focusing on number 1s, but if anybody asks, I'm number 2's to Joe there.
And Joe Murphy, what about you, if I ain't to?
Yes, well, I'd be looking for the number 1, and Mark, I think he's a very good independent, so I would be considering him for my number 2. Look, the votes are very important in this election, absolutely vital.
Well, when it comes down to it, the thirds and fourths and fifths will become
very important as well.
Also.
But it's the number ones we need to get elected. That okay. is the very, that's the most important one.
Jack Murray.
Yeah, well, obviously.
I don't know, would it, and you need a lot of number ones, but if you get 2s and 3s...
Still, you need to be right up there to start with.
You do.
Okay, I've seen people right up there not get elected and those down there end up elected. Yeah, but go on anyway. Anyway, that's besides the point. Go on, Jack, sorry.
Well, obviously, my number 2, I've been asking people to vote Terry Crossan. He's an excellent candidate, a long time personal friend of mine, and he'd be a first class public representative, so I'll be asking definitely people to give him a number 2 after that. I suppose that's my main priority, is to get 2 Sinn Féin representatives in the area, but I would, was transferred to other progressive, like-minded independents.
No, I'm not going to mute anyone on this, but the sort of the debate's been well rehearsed at this stage, but the question's coming in. It's a big one, particularly, I think, perhaps with South Innishone more so than North Innishone yesterday, and that is the slot machines. It's a big one, Mickey, and I don't know if you would roll your eyes at even the question coming up, but it's very important, and I think it's actually going to determine how some people vote. And I don't think it's necessarily, if you were relying on it coming up on the doorstep to sample the level of opposition to it, I think that wouldn't be a good marker. But anyway, you voted in favour of liberalising the laws, really, you could argue, of slot machines. Do you stand by that decision?
Regulating the laws.
Regulating them, yes. That's the other way of putting it, yeah.
Yes. Now, yes, I stand by it. It wasn't an easy decision. It wasn't a decision that I took easily. Done a lot of thinking about it. Listened.
What swayed you? What was the key argument that made you say, "Right,
the key argument was one of the people who were had written onto the council, and I mean, each of us got the same.
Who?
I'm not going to name anybody.
Wait, someone in the industry, someone employed in the industry,
somebody employed in it. A man of 55. This, I'll give you as much as I can, but I'm not going to be giving names. From Buncrana. 55. His wife went into bad health 6 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, and is still a mortgage, and is a young family, and there's only one wage coming in, and he's struggling to pay his mortgage as he is, and that's not going to get any better. And at 55, if he was to be out of work tomorrow,
that's rubbish.
Nobody was going to be out of work.
Nobody was.
There was never, and I
seen
anybody lost their
job.
That's Mark McKinney.
But no, hold on. Okay. So it would have been okay for these arcades to continue illegally?
No.
Is this what you're saying?
The regulation was that they can bring them in, as ones that the higher spend is on them. They're no limiting them, stuff like that. And gambling is a serious addiction.
It's a serious addiction, certainly. But yes, but online gambling has actually outweighed. Outweighed the casinos and so on.
But the difference in online gambling. Sorry, can I finish? Online gambling, we've no say on it.
No.
But you had a say on the local gambling.
Well, look, I've been very outspoken about the slot machines. I'm informed by personal experience and from within my circle of the devastating effects of slot machine addictions to slot machines. Now, there was never, that is an absolute Trojan horse. There was never any
job losses is a red herring.
Absolutely. Absolutely, it was a red herring. There was never any job losses coming down the line, and that was an excuse. It was a line put out in order to excuse what the councillors voted for. Now, there is, and I will be lobbying for, I was lobbying to make sure that the slot machines, that they didn't do that. They did it anyway. They did no public consultation. They didn't have any of the experts in who actually talk about the devastating effects of this type of gambling.
So in council, then, not only did you oppose this decision, but in council you would join the four or five others that we had in yesterday in actually trying to reverse this decision.
I actually put out
if there a mechanism such exists.
I put out a press release yesterday, and I that's exactly what it says. In section 13.1 of the legislation, the local authority may by resolution adopt this part in respect of the whole or a specified part of its administrative area, and may by resolution rescind such adoption. And I will be pushing forward to rescind the decision.
Councillor Canning, you voted in favour of regulation. Do you stand by that decision? Is anything that's happened since made you think, you know what, maybe I didn't listen to those who deal with people with chronic gambling problems. Maybe I didn't listen to school principals. Maybe I didn't listen to parents of vulnerable teenagers. Maybe I only listened to the submissions from those within the industry. And the presentation that you also had in the council chamber.
Well, whenever it came in front of us, the situation with it was there was an opportunity for us to regulate the rules of the 1956 Gaming Act.
So when you say regulate, so what have you done? What regulation is there now? Are we talking like there's a maximum bet, there's a maximum payout? What did you regulate?
The situation with it at the minute is they're open 23 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. Right? Did you regulate against that? I mean, can that be?
Yes.
Okay. So what was the term of the regulations
I'll
that
tell you
voted
the situation,
for?
The situation with it, right, is now, anybody now going for a gaming, right? Mm-hmm. They have to go in front of the courts, right? They have the judge then at that point in time will be able to put an age restriction on it. It will be able to put the payout restriction on it. He will be able to put a tariff on it. He will be able to put the
And what scope does he have in terms of maximum stake?
Just let me finish with the lot, first of all. The other item is, if you have a person within your locality that has a gambling problem, you can actually go to that court and you can ask that person to be barred from that premises. Also, the hours of business can decrease. The judge has the power to say it's going to be the same business, the same hours as the pubs, right? Now, so what we done was we regulated a situation. That's what we done. We regulated.
That's like banning the alcoholic from going to a pub. Absolutely did not regulate it. You liberalised it. And you voted to liberalise it despite the will of the people. And the will of the people is not behind you in this one. And you have to accept that.
Okay, Joe, do you want to come in here, please?
Well, it is coming up on the doors. And where I'm from, Buncrana, I grew up with it. And I know firsthand what it can do to people and families, what it can do to families.
Address Paul directly. He's talked about it could reduce the opening hours, it could restrict people going in there, it can set limits on what you can win, what you can put in. Compared to what's there now, is that not a step in the right direction?
No, because these rules and regulations were all there in the 80s whenever I was growing up in Buncrana, and they stood for absolutely nothing. I've spoken to people in Buncrana about this, Paul, and they are angry about the gaming laws. And I mean,
are they so angry they will vote?
I think so. Some of them will. Yes, definitely.
I'm going to bring you back in, Mark. I know you kind of just back and forth in a little bit. I'll give you a opportunity to speak about it in more detail. But Jack, Councillor Murray, your party, I think, was the only uniform sort of opposition to this, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, your views of the party are on the record, but just to give you a crack of the whip on this one too.
I voted against it, and I gave it considerable thought, and I was lobbied quite hard by different people.
What does that mean?
Well, the gaming machine owners were constantly on this. I was, even during the meeting, I was being texted by gaming machine owners who were telling me that word from inside the chamber was that it was my vote and it would hang on me, and it was considerable pressure.
What pressure or how... How did they try and influence you?
By saying that, that's like word inside the chamber, it'll be your vote. Like it'll be job losses unless you vote for this. And this kind
was
of
there any? Like, was there, just sorry, Jack, to tease this aspect of that, because people are going to listen to that and say, "Well, what does he mean by that?" So I want to get to the bottom of it. Were you given any commitment that, say, for instance, maybe your election campaign could be helped by a certain way? I'm not saying anything legal. I'm saying support wise.
That was never mentioned to me, but I know that it has been suggested that certain campaigns are now being backed by.
If the person who's sitting around the table wants to address that directly, they can. But I
would say that the idea that we voted for regulation and that's the reason we're doing it was to make them open less of the day or anything like that. The only reason the vote happened was because gaming machine owners came and asked us to take this decision. So those gaming machine owners didn't come in and go, "Here, lads, we need to be regulated. We're open too late. We're giving out too much money here."
Why were they so keen to come in and get regulated if it was going to be of such a detriment to them that it could cost them money, Paul?
Yeah, situation. I asked that question. I found it in a strange place, and I went to a senior barrister, to be quite honest with you, within the council, and I said to him, I said, there's something here that I'm not getting grasp of, and he says. To be fair, he says, if you do not have regulation within the system, there is no enforcement. And he says, there's items comes in front of the courts and in front of the judges, and they were throughout. And that's fact.
Mark McKinney?
I just want to highlight, you said there now, Jack, that some people running might have been getting help from owners of these machines. That's shocking.
Well, I don't know. I can't.
You can't just say.
Well, I voted against.
Have you any evidence of that? Because it's quite a strong accusation to.
No, I said it's been, I'm not accusing.
Because it could be anybody here.
I'm not accusing anybody.
You did say it though.
I said it's been suggested to me, but I'm not accusing anybody. Okay. So if anybody wants to clear it up, that's okay.
Well, I'm just glad that.
Mickey, did you want to come in there?
Just on the matter, there's actually the new legislation there from government, 200-page document.
Yeah, and it's leaning back towards.
Very, very interesting.
Okay. Did you want to say one final word, Sinead?
Yeah, no, I'm just glad that we lobbied as hard as what we did, because, you know, some of the councillors were on the fence about it. My position has always been firmly against it.
What would, outside of the flooding, the gaming, which I think is more, I don't know how much it is on the doorsteps, whatever, what would you say the other biggest is unfinished estates the next in line? I'll start with you, Paul, on this one. You know, what are the concerns people are having, and why, even after a commitment is given to take over an estate, what is taking so long for the council to take these estates into ownership and to fix them up where need be and to provide proper services? And this is one that applies right across the county, really.
Yeah, it's major, and it's a slow burner, like everything is a man. But situation with when residents decide they want the estate taken over by Donegal County Council, 51% of them have to be in agreement, right, if the developer is gone. So what happens is they apply to Donegal County Council for takeover of the estate. That is then listed. What happens then is all of the full file is brought before the council. You put in your application, you do your maps, you do everything.
Well, that's gobbledygook. Not your gobbledygook, by the way. Yeah. But what I'm saying is, what people in and housing estate want to know is, listen, I didn't vote for you to sort of tell me what's wrong with the system. I voted for you to get this estate taken over. In a nutshell, what's the hold-up and what can councillors do to rectify it?
The problem was the unfinished estate. The reason it's unfinished is their items are outstanding, and it takes money to get them outstanding items fixed, right? So what you have is they send out a survey. They do a survey of the pipework. They do a survey of the sewer system. They do a survey of the.
What about the deposit? What about the developer's deposit? What about that? Yeah. Where is that?
A lot of it was insurance. The time the developer they could have done a bond. And it was passed on from house to house to house to house, right? And what happened was, and we've had the discussion earlier, that when a person was purchasing the house, right, they purchased the house and they purchased off the plans. And then you had the architect signing off on the house only. And that house was finished and that person got that house and all payments were made.
Infrastructure was an issue.
But the actual site was never signed off on. and that's...
And this is one specific estate, is it?
That's all.
Across the board. Councillor McKee,
just what Paul said there, that's what I was about to say.
Okay.
You know, there was management companies put together then, and some of them failed to continue those companies, which obviously failed to the service. Has been.
Did the council fail?
Council failed big time.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yes. One question, as it relates to ensuring that people don't have bad concrete or blocks or are allowed to build in floodplains, okay, or are allowed to purchase houses in this manner, has the council, or are you as councillors or prospective councillors pressurising the council to ensure that we're not doing this again in 10, 15 or 20 years' time?
As my fellow councillors here know...
Can this happen again?
It's something that comes up at mostly all meetings.
But can it happen again, Councillor?
I don't think, first of all, that the blame lays fully at the feet of the council.
Whatever it is, whether it's planning authorities, yeah. Whether it's government, I'm throwing the council in, sorry, here with sort of, you know, local and national government, the bodies that are put in place to make sure we don't...
National planning legislation's made at national level, and we did have the building boom and the loose planning regulations that allowed all this to happen.
Has that been tightened up now?
It has, to a certain extent, that it's very, very difficult to get planning, and in many cases it's gone nearly too far, particularly in rural and a one-off housing. It can be very difficult. But to answer your question, it can happen again if the government of the day wants it to happen again.
Joe Murphy.
It's going to keep happening. I mean, a lot of the states I'm going to, this is a problem. One woman there from 1984, and every time she rings up about it or emails about it, she gets back a pile of, she calls it now junk mail. But there is ways around this. There is ways of stopping this. And we have to get together and stop it from happening from now on. Other countries have dealt with it. And what they do is the contractor, whoever is building the site, pays or sells the site to the government for a pound or a euro or whatever it is. And that then, before them houses is handed over or the leases is handed over or what, you know, the houses are actually sold again, they have to go to the government, prove to the government that everything is above board, we're all okay, it's all ready to be handed over, and then the government sells it back to the contractor for a euro or a dollar or whatever it is.
Okay, Mark McKinney. Well, there's a lot of upset out there, presumably you're getting it.
There's a lot, and what came up too when I was speaking to Andrew Craig down in Mavol was the lack of power that the councillors actually have. They've been fighting for 30 years against a treatment plant, and in fairness, all the councillors, certain councillors of the past and present, they've all backed them. But when it goes to county manager, it's his word. And like for one man to have the word, it's wrong in so many ways.
Councillor Canning, say for instance houses being built, say take Burnfoot for example, being built really in places that are liable to flooding. Can that happen anymore?
No. The law, the policies and the legislation now within our development plan is not going to allow
that.
Okay,
you were nodding
happen.
When Mark was speaking, what were you in agreement with there? Can you remember?
Maybe
you're
just listening.
The council don't have as much power.
Oh yeah, councillors don't have the influence that they once had. I mean, there's been a Dan Brady.
Don't agree with that. I mean, we do our best and try and do our best for the communities out there and bring it to council. And certainly, yes, it all goes through motions and all the rest at a meeting. And that's the last you hear of it.
Slade, last few on this issue of the unfinished estates and more broadly, maybe. Legislation.
Well, look, it's coming up at the doors, a lot of unfinished estates and council not taking over roads and streetlights and all of that. But in terms of the planning regulations, there are still some instances where people are flouting the planning regulations. They know how to work the system and they're getting away with it, whereby there are people who do want to build a home in their homeland, in next door to their own home house, and they're not getting to build. I think that's wrong.
Right, that's where we have to leave it. All of you, thank you.
Is that it?
That's right, Sinead.
That went quick.
It did, didn't it? It was an hour.
Thanks.
All of you, the very best of luck. Thank you very much for calling in. It's going to be exciting, nerve-wracking and tense and all that kind of stuff. A few people maybe... You're kind of out your own area, Mickey. You're up against it. And everyone has their own little challenges.
I might as well be in South Africa.
We wish you all the very best of luck. Councillor Mickey Doherty of Fine Gael, Councillor Jack Murray Sinn Féin, Sinead Stewart Independent, Joe Murphy of Aintu, Councillor Paul Canning Fianna Fáil, and last but not least, Mark Kinney Independent again. Thank you all of you.